Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host Bill McHenry is out today, but we have a great substitute in Lee Cantor, our producer. Hey, Lee.
Why, I think you're overselling me, Ron.
No.
Adequate. I think adequate would be
just
fine.
Just adequate? Okay.
Yes.
I always thought you were Mr. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, Lee, you know, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business, which can be kind of scary for folks, but, you know, by talking to folks that have been through launches and actually, you know, teach launching and all like that, our entrepreneurs, our listeners can really successfully navigate their launch. You know, this morning we're going to be featuring Laura Wage of Morphus LLC, but before we get started, Lee, could you thank today's sponsor?
Sure. Our sponsor today is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Okay. Well, you know, Laura Wage is the founder and CEO of Morphus Business Solutions, and she's going to share the formula for success that she's used to effectively make the metamorphosis from employee to entrepreneur. And this is exactly the same methodology that she leverages for both her clients and who are looking to transition into entrepreneurship, as well as for existing businesses seeking to increase their revenues. With her structured entrepreneur approach, she works side by side with budding and established business owners to create systemized processes that, you know, that propel their organizations from functional to absolutely exceptional. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Okay, and I really appreciate you being here. Morphus Business Solutions, what led you to actually launch that?
It's a great question. I was in a situation like a lot of other people in this economy right now where the company that I worked for got hit hard, and we went through a series of layoffs, and at the point that about 80% of the company was laid off, I was one of the people affected. And with that situation, I really took a step back and looked at what my options would be. I could have gone into the job market trying to find something new to do, but what I realized was that I had a skill set, I had an experience level, and I had a knowledge base that would really allow me to take all of that, roll it into one, and create something that could help other people that were in the same struggle that I was currently in.
How about that? Because I know a lot of people, the first thing that they would think about is, well, I need to go find another job.
Mm-hmm.
But you took a different course.
I did. What I realized is that the stability of the company that I worked for is if I looked for another job, I was always going to be in that situation where my stability was lying on somebody else's shoulders. And we all know entrepreneurs tend to be control freaks. I admit I'm one of the first. But on that basis, I knew that if I was going to take control of my own future, I wanted to be able to control that level of stability. I also looked at what my company had done right and done wrong, and you can learn a lot from both sides of that coin, and I took those lessons, applied them, and was able to launch a successful company in the middle of a down economy.
Now, were you ever an entrepreneur before this?
No, but the role that I played was one where I helped other entrepreneurs to evaluate their business processes, to come up with methodologies and strategies that would make their businesses more impactful, and to create better customer experiences. So I had the indirect role of coaching entrepreneurs. I just had never made the jump myself.
How about that? That's because it looks like you almost had on-the-job training for being an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I know that when I was working for 32 years for a company, whenever I'd see somebody that started their own business, I'd always be amazed at how they had the courage to actually launch out, you know, with no floor but no ceiling and go do that. Did you ever think about how much courage it took to do that?
I did. You know, one of the biggest obstacles that I personally faced was the fear aspect, because there is a large component of fear that comes into play when you're going to make that sort of a transition. I'm a mom, so I had the responsibility of making sure that the bills got paid every month. There were a lot of things that went into that dynamic. But what I realized was that the obstacles in front of me were never as big as my fear made them out to be. So when I focused on the internal game and dealt with the fear, I was able to feel the fear, but push through and do it anyways. And I really attribute my courage to just being able to move through the fear and not let it paralyze me.
Yeah, I know what helped me is they told me that fear is really an acronym, F-E-A-R, for false evidence appearing real.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's and I actually remember seeing a cartoon once with the first Gulf War that they always thought that the army that Saddam Hussein had was, you know, the number three army in the world, and that everybody was scared about it. And it, the cartoon actually shows somebody going up to this thing that's made out of paper, and when they went through, it's like, oh, wasn't as bad as we thought.
And isn't I think
most fears are that way. Once you face them, you're like, and so what was the big deal about this? You know?
Absolutely. And I do admit that I had a little bit of an advantage in the fact that I had already seen thousands of other entrepreneurs and business owners work through these fears themselves. So, you know, I took each step with the attitude that if they could do it, I could do it, and just don't give up. The persistence had to be there every day, even on the days when I was tired and wondered, what am I doing? It was just don't give up. Just keep persevering, and the fear dissipated.
How about that? Well, I know that when I retired, that the company I was with actually paid for me to go to an outplacement service to either learn how to get another job or how to start my own company. And, of course, I went the start my own company route. And I noticed all the people that were coming into the entrepreneur program, they a lot of them would say, you know, I'm a real smart person. I can do just about anything. I can solve any problem that any company has. And they would have just kind of a really broad area that they would try to present themselves as being, you know, another McKinsey or something like that. How important is it having a really well-defined niche?
I think it's incredibly important. I know that there's two sides to that argument. Some people will say create the product first and then find the audience that would want it. I am of the personal belief that you really have to understand your niche, and you have to understand what their problems and their pains are. The way that I define what I do is I get paid for solving people's problems, but it wasn't until I understood their problems that I could create a solution that was of value to them and move them forward in their entrepreneurial journey. So I think it's incredibly important. And the other thing is that once you are an expert in your niche, it allows you to really get broad in that niche, to get deep, to be able to solve so many more problems, and to put yourself in the position of being the go-to person in your field, which obviously can change the whole dynamic of your organization.
Now, how did you come to that conclusion? Was this a lot of research on your part to decide whether to go broader, to go niche?
It was research. It was also some phenomenal mentors. I looked at the people that I felt were experts in their individual niches, and I asked them what they did and how they did it. One of the very valuable lessons that I learned in that is that everybody is approachable. Some of the experts that I approached were people who are very, very prominent. They are New York best-selling authors. They've got huge companies. Everybody is approachable. And by being willing to ask the questions and then learn the lessons, I couldn't assume that I knew it all. I had to take the knowledge from other people, apply it, and then help other people do the same.
Was that surprising that people that had a big following were so approachable?
It actually was. In the beginning, I was a little bit intimidated, and I kept thinking, you know, is this appropriate? Should I approach them? Am I maybe being a little bit too big for my britches, you know? And what I learned through that process is that the higher up the food chain that I got in terms of business success, the more willing they were to help the entrepreneurs that were just getting started. So it was a very, very humbling lesson to learn, and one that I look forward to putting into place for myself as I continue up this ladder through this journey and helping people along the way.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty amazing that folks do want to help. You know, they don't look at you as a competitor or anything like that, or they don't want to hold all their secrets close to their chest or anything like that. They're willing to share and to mentor.
And I think one of the things that's really changing, especially with this economy, is we've really moved from competition to collaboration. And what I'm finding is that there are a lot of business partners who maybe 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, would have looked at each other as competition and are now finding ways to collaborate and grow together instead of competing with one another.
Yeah, I mean, the phrase that I heard here recently was called paying it forward, that people, you know, will help you out, knowing that somewhere in the universe they're going to get a return on that someday. Maybe not immediately, maybe not from the person that they just helped, but, you know, the law of compensation is always at work.
I believe in that 100%.
Right. I think back in the day, even 5-10 years ago, was people thought of it as a zero-sum game, where it was my victory was somehow a loss for you, and vice versa. And now, because of, I think, the advent of the social media and people out there more in a more transparent way. They're more open to sharing and for asking for help and receiving help.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the concept I heard many years ago was that some people view the market out there or the money that can be earned as a fixed pie. And so if you get a slice of the pie, then there's less pie for me. And other people see it as a growing pie, that the pie is just mm-hmm. constantly growing and there's plenty for everybody.
Yeah, I think that law of abundance really holds true. I mean, there's when you approach business with a mindset that it's not about scarcity, it is about abundance, then more business flows to you. It's interesting. I was having a conversation with somebody that maybe 3 years ago I would have considered competition. He's also a business consultant, and he just referred three different clients to me simply because my skill set and my experience can help them in a different way. So that type of collaboration that then allows me to do the same, you know, we can't be all things to all people. So when we can help the ones where it's appropriate to help them, but still refer them to some of our competitors or those that we collaborate with, it just helps to make everybody more successful.
Yep, sure does. Well, as you were starting out, were you winging it and just going by the seat of your pants, or were you pretty systematic?
That's a funny question. So I spent years helping people to be systematic. And when I first started out, I have to admit, I was winging it. You know, we don't always practice what we preach. And I had to learn my own lesson pretty quickly and pretty abruptly. I don't think, in my personal opinion, and others may disagree, but I don't think that you can be a truly successful entrepreneur if you wing it. I think that there's too many moving pieces and parts that have to be automated, that have to be systemized. I think that you limit your growth if you don't put yourself into a situation where you are systemizing your business so that you have predictable, repeatable processes. I liken it to, I would rather work on my business than in my business so I can grow it beyond the capacity of myself. And that was a big lesson for me to learn. I had to go back to the basics, which is an important thing to sometimes do, and recognize that this was not going to be about flying by the seat of my pants no matter how much experience I had. I had to be as systematic as all the other clients that I had helped over the years.
Yeah. Now, how did someone who was a self-described control freak learn how to delegate and feel comfortable in that area?
That is probably the absolute question of the hour. The delegation was a hard piece, and I actually have a sort of a scientific formula that I use to get myself through that. What I did is I looked at how much money was I going to make this year, and I broke that down by how many hours a week did I want to work. And what I determined was that my average hourly rate was about $95 an hour. And then I looked at all the tasks that I was completing in a given day that were taking up my time and really sucking up my bandwidth and said, okay, how many of these are $95 an hour activities, or how many of these could I delegate out, free up my time to drive more business, and free up my time to be a better mother and have more time available for my family? And it was a really interesting way to approach it. I was able to take a lot of the tasks that were redundant tasks and hire an amazing administrative assistant who's a college student at a very reasonable rate so that she's now taking care of those aspects of the daily tasks, the redundant tasks. And it simplified the process for me. It allowed me to delegate with safety. I inspect what I expect. I certainly make sure that she's staying on task with what I've assigned. And then I just had to trust, which is very hard for a control freak, but it's what you have to do if you want to grow.
Yeah, because if you don't delegate, sooner or later, your business will implode because mm-hmm. Your quality will start going down. You won't be able, you'll be running around like the guy that's spinning all the plates, you know, on the Ed Sullivan show. Yeah. And it's going to be disastrous.
Exactly.
Yep, I've seen that happen over and over again. Well, do you set any kind of goals for yourself?
I do. I am a huge proponent of goals on a bigger scale and a smaller scale. So every January I set what my annual goals are, but I drill down from there. So I actually have quarterly, monthly, and weekly goals. And what that allows me to do is quickly identify if I'm on track or if I'm off track and need to course continue. So it allows me the ability to correct where necessary. I think that the goals are what have allowed me to be a successful business that erupted out of a downtrodden economy. Without the goals, I probably would not be on track, and I probably wouldn't be so diligent in how I handle things on a daily basis.
Can you share a little bit about how that trickles down to your day, and if you have any kind of systems in the daily, you know, kind of micro way?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, my systems on a daily basis, they always start with that weekly goal in mind. So every Sunday night, I sit down and I know what I have to accomplish that week. Then I drill it down into bite-sized chunks and calendar it, which is huge. I don't just say, this is what I'm going to do this week. I put a calendarized slot every day in my calendar for what has to be done to get me towards that specific task. Then I also look at the things that start to creep up or that that start to suck time where I'm saying, okay, I no longer have the time. I've got to reassess, am I delegating enough? One of the things that I did in the last 2 weeks is I hired an IT director because my IT division was getting a little bit too large for me to continue to handle on my own. So that was one of the tasks that on a daily basis, I said, okay, it's time to get IT in-house, started building towards that. So definitely each and every one of my days is about the larger goal. But first and foremost, it's about getting it into the calendar and committing the time slot to do it. Otherwise, emails and phone calls can just get ahead of me and I can lose focus on what's really important.
Do you break down like each day, like Monday is a marketing day, Tuesday is, you know, do the work day, or do you do it like that?
I don't, but here is why. I have recommended that to a lot of clients, but I think you need to know your audience and you need to know your business model. The type of services that I'm offering are customized to my individual clients' needs, and I have clients internationally. So because of that, I have clients where, as an example, I have a few that live in Canada where I've got to be really flexible on the time frame that I work. So I schedule my client time first, and then I schedule my marketing blocks around that, and I build sort of from the inside out. You know, again, it's just dependent on what your business model is. If I was a purely sales organization selling a widget, I would 100% agree with scheduling marketing, prospecting, sales calls first. So I think it's one of the important aspects of understand your niche, understand your clients, understand what your deliverable is, and set your business up for success on a daily basis.
Well, that sounds pretty systematic there. Is your business seasonal, or does it have ups and downs and peaks and valleys, or is it pretty steady?
My business is pretty steady. What's interesting is I have clients that have seasonal businesses, and I will oftentimes find myself with referrals in a seasonal niche. But because I am helping people to, A, make the transition from employee to entrepreneur, or B, to take their smaller business and systemize it so that it can become a larger business, that's a need that people have every day of the year, regardless of what's going on.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that transition from employee to entrepreneur. I know that my very last day at work, I was looking at my employee badge, and I'm like, you know, when I'm going to walk out of here, I'm going to turn this thing in. Who am I going to be when I no longer have this badge on, okay? And I found it very disorienting, and I call it the whirlpool of disorientation.
Did you make a badge for yourself?
No, I did not make a badge for myself.
Just help so in that have, transition?
So I'd have an identity. No, but it was just one of those things of, work at the same place for 32 years, your identity gets kind of locked in to being, you know, an employee of that company. And it was really disorienting. It was like, I'm no longer an employee of this place. Who am I, you know? Mm-hmm. Do you encounter that with folks making that transition?
Absolutely, I do. I am actually a Tony Robbins certified coach. And the reason that I went through that education phase was because I fully understood that there is a psychology involved with making that transition from employee to entrepreneur. There is so much security when you are an employee, and even if you get up and you don't feel like working 100% or you call in sick, you still get paid. You get your sick pay, your paid time off for vacation, you're still taken care of. So the mindset that has to shift when you make that transition is huge. And one of the things that was important to me was that if I was going to put myself in a position of helping people to make that transition, I didn't want to solely rely on my business experience, even though I knew that I had the business knowledge and skill set to help with that aspect. I wanted to make sure that I could help my clients understand the psychological ramifications of not dealing with the mindset and not getting to the point where they could think like a business owner and less like an employee.
Do you think that there's a, are entrepreneurs like born or are they made? Do you think that there's certain traits that a person's got to be in order to succeed as an entrepreneur, or is it something that anybody could do it if they are trained properly?
Actually, I believe in both. I believe that all business skills are learnable. I believe that with the right coaching and the right education that you can learn to do just about anything. But I also believe that certain skills are innate to your personality. Somebody who just has no diligence, if you can't give them enough reason to be diligent and follow up, that they're not going to be a successful entrepreneur. If they have no persistence and they're easily knocked down, they're not going to be able to be successful. Now, I still believe that you can coach them on that, but I do believe that sometimes we have to make a personal decision. Do I even want to be an entrepreneur? And some people start down this journey of making the employee to entrepreneur position or transition and recognize that while it sounds great and people often associate entrepreneurialism with time and money freedom, sometimes they don't really want to put in the effort to get to the time and money freedom, and they are actually happier being employees.
How about that? Mm-hmm. Well, what about risk tolerance? I mean, if a person has got pretty much a zero tolerance for risk, can they be an entrepreneur?
You know, I think the risk tolerance is one of the bigger obstacles that they have to overcome, because the risk tolerance goes back into the fact that they're going to then let their fear stop them every step of the way. I think that you have to be willing to take on a certain amount of risk to be an entrepreneur. There are no guarantees. So if you have zero risk tolerance, it's going to be really difficult to successfully make that transition. And then it's beyond the transition, right? Because you have to get up every day and know that just because you're successful today does not guarantee success tomorrow. If the economy changes, you've got to be willing to adapt and to reassess what the risk tolerance is.
Yeah, in this economy, even having a job in a big private company, there's a lot of risk, as mm-hmm. all these unemployed and downsized people see. I guess there's no risk-free occupation. I guess maybe the government work is the only risk-free occupation where you're going to get a paycheck,
right?
You know, every day.
I think that's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I know that I was talking to a person the other day that is getting ready to launch their own business. And I perceived pretty quickly that she didn't want to have any risk whatsoever. And I'm just like, boy, I don't know if this is going to work out for her.
It's going to get a little scary, you know, that first day that, you know, she doesn't have the money or there's no mm-hmm. sales.
Right.
Yeah, that's a harsh reality.
Yeah. And I know one of the things I tell folks is that when you start a new venture, it's a lot like planting English ivy. The first year you plant English ivy, it's sleeping. Mm-hmm. The second year it's creeping. The third year it's leaping. What do you share with entrepreneurs when they're just starting out about how long is it going to take before you got some really nice cash flow
right,
coming in?
That managing the expectations, that's got to be a big learning curve, especially somebody who's coming from maybe a downsized corporate person mm-hmm. where in their mind, you know, they're used to getting their calls returned. They're used to, you know, I work for a big company, so I'm used to, you know, I just pick up the phone and I say, I'm with this big company, and then boom, everybody's my friend and they're calling me back, and now they're a person with little company. And those phone calls don't get returned as quickly, and they're not as top of mind as they used to be.
Absolutely. One of the things when it comes to setting expectations, similar to the ivy analogy that you just gave, I like the analogy of bamboo. When you plant a bamboo tree, you know, it's going to take a good solid 3 years, and you think nothing is happening, and then all of a sudden it shoots up 90 feet within a matter of weeks. And what's happening under the surface is that the roots are getting wide and deep and soaking up the nutrients that they need. So based on individual business plans, we go through and we figure out what is a reasonable expectation. Obviously, some business models are going to have, you know, quicker revenue generation than others. So we realistically look at what the revenue expectation should be. And then I personally like to live by the guidance of cut it in half. If you think that you're going to be able to generate $1,000 a month as a beginning entrepreneur and you're going to be doing this on the side while you still have another job, then let's cut that in half and say, realistically, if you think it's $1,000, it should be $500. And I like to start with small expectations that can be reasonably managed. I'd never want to see a client get into a situation where they jump into the deep end unprepared. So it is all about expectations. It's about understanding what it's going to take to get out there, to get those people to return your calls, and being creative as well, taking opportunities to be on a radio show like this, to... I was actually interviewed by Fox Business last week. So things like that, that give you the opportunity to become that expert in your niche, to understand the audience that you're trying to address, and to be able to share the value that you bring to the table can really help alleviate that curve.
So do you recommend that a person test the waters, like you said, while being employed and kind of on their own thing on the side?
If they are a brand new entrepreneur, that's often something that I recommend. I think it's a way for them to identify what is their risk tolerance, which is an important part of it. What is their dedication? A lot of people believe that they want to be entrepreneurs, but when the rubber hits the road, it's a lot more work than they realized. And again, it goes back to what is the psychology of business when you are running the show versus showing up and punching a clock. And it's something that has to be evaluated. I think it's a wonderful thing when somebody wants to evaluate if it's right for them. I think it's equally wonderful when they determine it's not for them. Because the last thing I want to see is an entrepreneur struggling, unable to make their bills, and then have a gap in their resume that makes it even more difficult to get a job.
Yeah, I know that my first year in business was pretty grim, okay? And looking back, it's like if I'd had the option, which I didn't, of just kind of easing in to my line of work, you know, while I was still employed and doing it on weekends and everything like that, that sure would have been a lot smarter way to do things and kind of build up a clientele like that as I eased out. But there was a deadline on when I could retire, and I had not yet passed the patent bar because, you know, I retired, then I passed the patent bar, then I got my first client. And, you know, there's over 600 patent agents and attorneys in Georgia. And I was brand spanking new and hadn't written my first patent. And, you know, why would anybody do business with me? Mm-hmm. And so that first year was pretty tough. And it's like, boy, I sure wish I had, you know, thought about, you know, getting in this line of work about 3 years earlier and really built up some momentum and like that. That'd been a whole lot better.
Absolutely.
But there's nothing like burn the ships and I'm going to do this if it kills me. You know?
It's had a happy ending. Your bamboo grew pretty good.
Yeah, just about the time that my wife started saying, you know, have you thought about getting a job? About that time, the business took off, and it was good. It was real good. But I was beginning to wonder, you know, you start having doubts, you know, after that first year. Is this really going to work? I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. Nothing's happening. And I kept remembering the old analogy of the pump in the desert where you put some water in this little pump and you're pumping and you're pumping and you're pumping, but nothing but air is coming out. But if you could see a cross-section of the earth, you could see the water's moving up, you know, the pipe there. And if you keep pumping, it eventually comes out.
You got to have faith.
Yeah, you definitely have to have faith. Okay. But what was the worst mistake that you made that our listeners might be able to avoid?
Oh, that's easy. The worst mistake I made really in the beginning was thinking that I could do it all on my own. It goes back to your point about delegation, Lee, is I felt that I had, you know, such a great skill set. I can do this all. I'm superwoman. That's it. I'm doing it. I'm good to go. And it was very humbling to quickly realize that I couldn't do it all on my own. I had to find and seek out the right mentors. I had to hire the administrative assistant. You know, little steps along the way, I really had to take a look at how much of this was going to be about my ego and wanting to claim the control freak side of me and wanting to do it all on my own, and how much of this was going to be about building a stable company that was going to be here to continue to help people grow better businesses and make that transition.
Yeah. Well, I know that when I talk to brand new inventors that are starting the journey, I tell them that there's four elements really that takes to have success as an individual inventor. One is to have that good idea, but number two is to have the right team to help you move forward. And a lot of inventors try to do the old John Wayne part, you know, if I can do everything myself. And then they, in addition to having a good idea and the right team, you know, they're going to need a really thorough plan, okay, that they're going to execute on and follow. And then they need adequate funding because it always takes more money and more time to take a new product to market than you think.
Absolutely.
And if all they do is think they've just got the idea and they can do it themselves, they're really programmed for failure. It's not going to happen. But it's going to take a really good folks that can help you out.
Yeah. Without the team that I had in place, there's no way I would be where I'm at today. And it's, you know, it's been one of those, humbling really is the best word for it, because the team that supported me in my growth and my direction, especially when I was telling people, everybody's losing their jobs, but I'm going to help people create new companies. And people are looking at me like I have two heads. But it started with the passion and grew into the business. And with the right support, I truly believe anything's possible.
Yeah, it's kind of counterintuitive, but a down economy is absolutely the best time to start a business because everybody else is hunkered down.
Yes.
And anybody that's got the courage to move forward, you know, they're going to be on the crest of the wave when things start picking up.
Absolutely. But I read a great book, The Millionaire Next Door, and by Thomas Stanley, and it was talking about just that. Yeah. The number of first-generation self-made millionaires that are born out of this type of an economy because they were able to push through the fear, take their business to market, and create something that was lasting.
And I think he's from Atlanta, is he not?
Is he really? I didn't know that.
I think so.
Yeah, because I think he interviewed quite a few folks in this area.
Oh, how great is that?
Yeah.
See that? He's really next door.
See?
Really next door. Yeah, because it was kind of eye-opening looking at the profile of the average millionaire, mm-hmm. of the kind of car that they drove and the kind of house that they were in and married to the same people all that time. It was not what... You know, when you think of the lives of the rich and famous, it was not that picture.
No. Okay.
They were really consistent savers. They did have their own business most mm-hmm. of the time.
Right.
It's really interesting patterns.
Then the other thing that I found interesting and was I had read another study about the correlation between the way that they treated finances personally and the way that they treated finances in their business. And those that were more frugal and diligent with their own personal finances, who also had that mentality in their business finances, were the ones who had more successful businesses that unfolded. And that's another one of those pieces that I'm always trying to instill in my clients is being sensitive to what your dollar is. How much are you spending? Where is it that you are trying to create the most bang for the buck? And where is it that maybe your monies are being foolishly spent? Because that is a big part of being able to, like you said, get through that first year. Sometimes those first 3 years. I mean, there's a reason that statistically speaking, 90% of all new businesses fail. And a lot of it comes down to, I believe, not taking proper control of the finances and not having the systems in your business to be able to create a predictable, repeatable process.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know a lot of folks that I've watched crash and burn. They would be trying to get all their ducks in a row, saying, well, I've got to have an office, I've got to have all this furniture, telephone system, mm-hmm. computers like that. So they're trying to get all their ducks in a row, and I'm like, go out and get a duck, okay?
Yes.
that's the first thing you should do.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. They want the trappings of the business, but they don't actually have a business yet.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And that's all too common, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And a lot of that happened back in the dot-com boom days, mm-hmm. that they would have this big splash and invite everybody in with a big party and all that. And
right.
A couple months later, they'd go under. You
They're
know?
Like, hey, maybe we should have sold something first.
That's right.
Now, that's a novel concept.
that's true. Well, I'm intrigued about the Tony Robbins aspect. What? Tell me the story about you becoming a trainer.
Well, I'm one of his certified coaches. I went through his coaching program, and it was really just for the perspective of understanding the psychology of people better. I believe that learners are earners, and I've made a commitment to myself to always be educating myself in every aspect possible. And while I had a great business skill set, I felt that I would be I'd be able to serve the type of people that I wanted to help better if I could understand their psychology along the way. And he's somebody that I've always respected. I've always really been fond of the way that he helps people, how quickly he's able to identify what's holding them back, what's getting in their way. And, you know, I will never be a Tony Robbins, admittedly. But to even have the education from his knowledge and his perspective was something that hands down has allowed me to help my clients in a way that I never could have imagined before. Because like I said before, it's not just about the skill set. It's not just about understanding business. If you let fear take you out of the game, if you can't get past the personality traits that are holding you back, if you can't deal with the inner game, you cannot maximize the outer game. And I wanted to be able to help people with both.
Yeah, because your inner world definitely controls your outer world.
It does.
Yeah, my sister sent me, I think it was called the Giant Within book many, many years ago.
Yes.
And I remember going through it, and I'm like, you know, Tony knows his stuff. I mean, he has actually nailed it on the money. Yeah, I've got a lot of respect for him. Well, Laura, this has really been good. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
They can actually reach me through my website, which is morphosbizsolutions.com. They can also email me, Laura@morphosbizsolutions.com. And we can be reached by phone at 678-881-9821.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show today, Laura. Our listeners have really gotten some really golden nuggets from your experiences today. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Another great show, Lee.
Sure. A special thanks to today's sponsor, Patents & More, your trusted guide through the innovation jungle.
And go to our blog, thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com, to listen again to today's show plus previous shows. This is Ron Reardon and Lee Cantor signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.